Good morning. I'd like to call this meeting of the Standing Advisory Committee to order. Thank you all for being here this morning, members of the Standing Advisory Group and official observers, PCAOB board members and staff, everyone supporting the functioning of this meeting, those here to observe as well as those listening in on our webcast this morning. This is the annual meeting of the Standing Advisory Group. At this meeting, we will be seeking your views on our current standard-setting priorities of the PCAOB. In connection with that discussion, I will be giving a report on standards-related accomplishments over the past 12 months. We have two additional agenda items and an emerging issue. The first of those agenda items addresses auditing implications of IFRS financial statements in U.S. SEC filings. The second is a presentation of a working paper by the PCAOB's Office of Research and Analysis. The working paper studies market responses to financial statement restatement announcements in the Sarbanes-Oxley era. For the emerging issue discussion, we will return to the subject we discussed at the June meeting, which is financial reporting and auditing implications of the subprime lending situation and current market liquidity situation. Before I move to the first agenda item, I'd like to highlight two recent staff changes. As you know, Judy Howard joined the PCAOB staff this summer as SAG coordinator. This is Judy's first SAG meeting, and we're delighted to have her as part of the team. I hope everybody has a chance to meet her in person today, if you haven't already. Also, as you're probably aware, a member of the professional staff is responsible for overseeing the functioning of the SAG. This includes working with Judy on the logistical aspects of the SAG meetings and membership, overseeing the annual nominations process, and overseeing the development of meeting agendas and briefing papers. Bella Rivshin, Associate Chief Auditor, recently took on that responsibility, so you'll be seeing more and hearing more from Bella in the coming years. Jennifer Rand, one of our two Deputy Chief Auditors, has had the SAG oversight responsibility since our very first SAG meeting in June of 2004. Jennifer and I agreed it was time to pass on this opportunity to another member of our professional staff. Jennifer played a very substantial role in shaping the nature of this group, as well as the operation of the group, as well as in determining the matters in which we seek your advice and the way in which we do those, the way in which we seek your advice. She also, quite simply, made my job as SAG chairman as easy as she possibly could have. So I have no reservations in saying that Jennifer did an outstanding job over the last 3 years. So thank you very much, Jennifer. We also have a new face at our table today. Tom Linsmeyer, FASB board member, joins us this morning as the FASB observer. Tom, we're pleased to have you here. Okay, let me just remind you of two rules with regard to the facility in which we're holding this meeting. Now, please wear your suit jackets if you leave this room, and cell phone use is not permitted in the lobby. We will run this meeting in the manner we have in the past. When you decide you would like to comment, please put your name tent up on its side, and we will call on you when it is your turn to speak. So at this point, I'd like to move to the first agenda item, which is our standard-setting priorities and accomplishments. As I mentioned, this is our annual meeting of the Standing Advisory Group. At this meeting, the Office of the Chief Auditor will present to you for discussion the Board's standard-setting priorities. I will start the session with a report on our standards-related accomplishments over the past year, followed by an overview of the topics the PCAOB standard-setting staff believes should have the highest priority. I will then open the floor to discussion. We have slides that you can use to follow along and take notes on as I make this presentation. And I also have included in front of you the last page of the handout, the slides from last year's meeting, in case you'd like to refer to those as I go forward. So to set the stage for this discussion, I believe it is important to describe the significant standards-related accomplishments since last year's annual SAG meeting, as it will give you a sense of where the standard-setting staff and the board have devoted their substantive attention and resources. Many of these accomplishments relate directly to the priorities we discussed last year or are related to other matters that are important to this group. The first of our slides includes a listing of those accomplishments. The board remains focused on the successful implementation of the internal control reporting provisions of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act. Last year, we described the board's four-point plan and some of the efforts that ultimately led to auditing standard number 5, also which I will refer to as AS5, which has superseded the board's auditing standard number 2. In February, we devoted a considerable portion of the SAG meeting to discussing potential changes to the internal control auditing standard. On May 29 of this year, the board adopted AS5, and that was subsequently approved by the Securities and Exchange Commission in July. Yesterday, the PCAOB published for public comment staff guidance on auditing internal control over financial reporting for smaller public companies. The guidance was developed with the generous assistance of representatives from 12 registered public accounting firms. We also benefited from the assistance of the SEC staff, as well as review and comment from several smaller public companies. Auditors may use this guidance immediately. The comment period provides an opportunity to further improve the document. We now are focusing some additional attention to the delivery of education on the new auditing standard to smaller auditing firms. That would be in addition to what we historically have provided in our PCAOB forums on auditing in the small business environment. We have had considerable interaction with our colleagues in inspections throughout the internal control project. Inspection staff were involved in each step of our AS5 project, providing input based on their inspections experience generally and specifically with regard to the implementation of AS number 2, the board's initial internal control auditing standard. The Chief Auditor's Office remains involved in the development of the inspections approach and is participating in the development and delivery of inspections training on the new internal control auditing standard. Chief Auditor staff also assist our inspectors in evaluating inspection findings and in communicating those findings to the registered firms. As a side note, our experience with internal control illustrates the range of interaction between the various divisions of the PCAOB. Other PCAOB divisions, such as the Office of Research and Analysis and the Office of General Counsel, also provide input on each standards-related project. I expect the subject of internal control to continue to require a measurable portion of our resources over the next 12 months. Activities in this area will include completion of the small firm guidance, participation in the inspections process, and education for smaller auditing firms. The next item on the list is principles of reporting. On April 3rd of this year, the board published a proposed auditing standard evaluating consistency of financial statements and proposed amendments to interim auditing standards. This proposal was made in response to two actions by the Financial Accounting Standards Board. One is the issuance by the FASB of Statement of Financial Accounting Standards number 154, Accounting Changes and Error Corrections, which revised the accounting for and disclosure of accounting changes. The other is the FASB proposal to incorporate a hierarchy of generally accepted accounting principles into a new accounting standard. This gap hierarchy currently resides in the auditing literature. The comment period on this proposal ended in May, and we currently are working to complete revisions to the proposal based on the comments we received. Also on April 3rd, the board published a concept release concerning the scope of Rule 3523, Tax Services for Persons in Financial Reporting Oversight Roles. Based on the comments received on the concept release, the board on July 24th published a proposed amendment to Rule 3523 and a proposed new Rule 3526. The proposed amendment to Rule 3523 would change the scope of the rule to apply only to the professional engagement period rather than to the audit and professional engagement period. Proposed Rule 3526, Communications with Audit Committees Concerning Independence, is an updating of one of the board's interim independent standards, which is Independent Standards Board Standard Number 1, independence discussions with audit committees, also referred to as ISB number one. The proposal modestly expands the auditor's communication responsibility. The proposed rule would require the auditor, prior to accepting an initial engagement under the standards of the PCAOB, to describe in writing to the audit committee all relationships between the auditor and any affiliates of the auditor, and the potential audit client or persons in a financial oversight role at the potential audit client that may reasonably be thought to bear an independence. As is the case with ISB number one, the auditor also would be required to make a similar communication to the audit committee annually thereafter. The comment period on these proposals ended in September, and we currently are working to complete revisions to the proposals based on the comments we received. I would like to briefly describe certain other specific accomplishments since last year's annual SAG meeting. On October 17, 2006, which was shortly after last year's meeting, the staff issued a set of staff questions and answers to help auditors audit the fair value of share options granted to employees. This set of staff questions and answers explains how to apply the board's existing auditing standards to the fair values determined in applying FAS 123R and the SEC Staff Accounting Bulletin number 107. The guidance outlines the overall approach to auditing the fair value of option grants and focuses auditors' attention to the aspects of the valuation that have the most effect. On April 3, 2007, the staff issued another set of staff questions and answers, this one on ethics and independence rules concerning independence, tax services, and contingent fees. These questions and answers are intended to assist in the implementation of PCAOB Rules 3522, Tax Transactions, and 3523, Tax Services for Persons in Financial Reporting Oversight Roles. On January 22, 2007, the board issued an inspection report pursuant to its Rule 4010, which is titled Observations on Auditors' Implementation of PCAOB Standards Relating to Auditors' Responsibilities with Respect to Fraud. The report is a summary of observations made in the course of the board's inspections that are principally related to the way in which the inspected firms implemented Statement on Auditing Standards number 99, the auditor's consideration of fraud in a financial statement audit. The observations summarized in the report are sufficiently important or arise with sufficient frequency to warrant discussion in a public report, both for the purpose of generally focusing auditors on being diligent about these matters and for the purpose of providing information that audit committees may find useful in working with auditors. The Office of the Chief Auditor worked closely with the Inspections Division in preparing that report, and I'm hopeful that this report will help registered firms improve their focus on their responsibilities for fraud in a financial statement audit, and I encourage auditors to obtain and read that report. On April 18th, the board issued another inspections report pursuant to Rule 4010, report on the second year implementation of auditing standard number 2, an audit of internal control over financial reporting performed in conjunction with an audit of financial statements. OCA staff assisted inspections in preparing that report. So now let me move on to priorities going forward. The items on the next two slides are a listing of current priorities, matters that we expect to give substantive attention to at some time during the next 12 months. I expect that some, but not all, of these items will result in either proposed or final adopted standards or rules during the next 12 months. Now, although it's not included on the list of standard-setting priorities, the effective implementation of the internal control reporting provisions of the Act will continue to be a focus of this organization, as I've already mentioned. Now that AS number 5 has been approved, our focus is on its implementation and in making sure that registered firms have the information and training they need to appropriately implement the new standard. This will continue to require the PCAOB to devote resources in this area. As I indicated several minutes ago, we recently proposed standards and rules in the areas of independence and reporting, and we intend to complete those projects in the very near term. The next item on the list is engagement quality review. Section 103 of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act requires the board to adopt in its auditing standards a requirement for a concurring or second partner review and approval of each audit report and concurring approval of its issuance. We refer to the concurring or second partner review as the engagement quality review because we believe this term is more reflective of the objective of the review. The SAG has discussed the engagement quality reviews on two separate occasions. We also have worked closely with PCAOB inspectors in developing a draft standard, so this is an example of a project in which the PCAOB, as a standard setter, has been able to utilize knowledge gained through our inspections process. We have made substantial progress on this project, and it remains one of our top priorities. In the risk assessment project, we are reevaluating the auditor's risk assessment process, which includes the auditor's understanding of the company he or she is auditing and the company's environment, the auditor's assessment of the risk of material misstatement of the financial statements, and the linkage between the assessed risks and the nature, timing, and extent of the auditing procedures performed in response to those risks. Improvements in the auditing standards regarding risk assessment could encourage the appropriate integration of the audit of the financial statements with the audit of internal control over financial reporting by, for example, reframing the interim auditing standards to articulate a risk-based integrated audit process more directly. We have heard some concern that auditors are not consistently effective at assessing risk and then responding appropriately. Additionally, our inspectors have observed some cases in which auditors do not respond appropriately to fraud risk indicators. This project will give us an opportunity to further study and address these matters. Similarly, our inspectors have observed some cases in which auditors appear to have approached their consideration of fraud as an isolated mechanical process rather than as an integral part of the audit. The staff is evaluating how the auditor's fraud risk assessment should be integrated with the auditor's overall risk assessment. We believe there is an opportunity to clarify in the professional standards this relationship. The International Auditing and Assurance Standards Board, the IAASB, and the U.S. Auditing Standards Board have revised their auditing standards to enhance the auditor's risk assessment process, and we are evaluating the work of those two boards in connection with this project. This is a large project, and it affects several of the board's interim standards. Last year, we reported our plans to make substantial progress on this project over the ensuing 12 months. Our efforts regarding internal control have advanced our thinking on these issues as we determine the appropriate direction for assessing and responding to risk in an integrated audit. This is an important project, and we plan to make substantial progress during the next 12 months. We continue to keep our eyes on developments with regard to fair value accounting. Issuers were permitted to adopt Statement of Financial Accounting Standards number 157, Fair Value Measurements, this year, and the new standard becomes mandatory in 2008, although there has been some recent discussion about its effective dates. Issuers also were permitted to adopt Statement 159, Fair Value Option, this year. We have engaged in regular dialogue with the SEC, the FASB, auditors and issuers to assess whether there are emerging auditing issues. Measurement of fair value also is affected by the recent subprime mortgage and liquidity issues in the marketplace, which we discussed with the SAG in June, and will do so again later today. We have been evaluating the existing auditing standards on auditing estimates, auditing fair values, and using the work of specialists, all of which are pertinent to the audit of fair value measurements, to determine whether any changes to the board standards or additional staff guidance are needed. While some aspects of those standards will become obsolete once FAS 157 becomes mandatory for all companies, the majority of the principles in those standards still apply. So from an immediate perspective, we believe auditors will be able to apply the direction in those standards to the new accounting. We are, however, considering whether some additional guidance would be helpful. Eventually, it will be appropriate for us to update those standards. So I have included this topic on the list of standard setting priorities because of the likelihood that we would begin a project to update the related standards at some time in the next 12 months. Last year, we identified three projects that were in the second tier of priority, projects we expected to begin during the ensuing 12 months. Those are related parties, confirmations, and specialists. In the specialist project, we would reevaluate the auditor's use of specialists, either when a company engages or employs a specialist, and the auditor uses that specialist's work as evidential matter in performing an audit, or when an auditor engages a specialist and uses that specialist's work as evidential matter. The SAG has discussed issues relating to specialists. The IAASB and the Auditing Standards Board also have projects in process on the use of specialists, and we are monitoring those projects and will consider their results. Although we did not begin a standard-setting project on this subject during the past 12 months, specialists is a subject we have given substantive attention to in connection with our monitoring of developments in fair value accounting, and it continues to be a priority and is a project we expect to begin soon. In the related parties project, which will include consideration of fraud risk, we will reevaluate the auditor's obligation for the identification and evaluation of related parties and related party transactions, and consider what direction is needed to help auditors satisfy that obligation. We recently began working on this project at the staff level. In the confirmations project, we would reevaluate the auditor's use of confirmations to corroborate a company's account balances and transactions directly with third parties. The existing standards do not address all areas for which direct confirmation with third parties may be preferable to applying other audit procedures and certain practice issues, such as when management requests the auditor not to confirm, as well as authenticating confirmation responses received electronically. This project also would consider fraud risk. We were not able to devote attention to this project during the past year. We continue to see it as a priority, however. When the board adopted existing auditing standards of the AICPA on an initial transitional basis in April 2003, the board indicated that it would establish a schedule and procedure for the review of all the interim professional auditing standards. We have not yet established such a schedule or procedure. Rather, we have focused our standard-setting resources on specific priorities, which is consistent with advice we have received from the SAG. At the beginning of 2007, the staff began evaluating each of the board's interim auditing standards to begin the process of identifying the level of change necessary to adopt the standards as permanent standards of the board and to begin to formulate views as to their relative priority. Our next step is to develop a more defined schedule and procedure for this review with the board. I expect that we will seek additional advice from the SAG on this subject next year. There are three other matters not on the priority list that I would like to bring to your attention. There has been considerable discussion about the need for, and progress has been made toward, a set of single high-quality accounting standards for both domestic and cross-border financial reporting. Later today, we will consider possible auditing issues associated with the use of international financial reporting standards to prepare financial statements for use in the United States. Increasingly, questions are being raised about the need for uniform auditing standards for both domestic and cross-border financial reporting purposes. In the coming year, as we consider various aspects of our standard-setting role moving forward, I expect that we will seek the SAG's views on whether there is a need for a set of globally accepted auditing standards, how the PCAOB should interact with other auditing standard setters, and how this should fit within the PCAOB's other priorities, including our approach to acting on the board's interim professional standards. The second matter I wish to draw to your attention is XBRL, or Extensible Business Reporting Language. I expect that you are all familiar with this subject. In a nutshell, what XBRL does is to make financial information identifiable by computers so that the information can be more readily disseminated, analyzed, and used. The private sector has been developing this technology for some time, and more recently, the SEC, under Chairman Cox's leadership, has taken steps to encourage its implementation. Steps taken by the SEC include the XBRL Voluntary Financial Reporting Program, the recent release of the source code for the Interactive Financial Report Viewer, and the creation of the Office of Interactive Disclosure. As this initiative develops, the PCAOB staff will be working closely with the SEC to address auditors' responsibilities with regard to XBRL tag data. Finally, there are two federal advisory committees focused on the accounting profession. The SEC established the Advisory Committee on Improvements to Financial Reporting to examine the U.S. financial reporting system with the goals of reducing unnecessary complexity and making information more useful and understandable for investors. The U.S. Department of the Treasury established the Advisory Committee on the Auditing Profession to provide informed advice and recommendations to the Secretary of the Treasury and the Department of the Treasury on the sustainability of a strong and vibrant public company auditing profession. The PCAOB serves as observer on both of these federal advisory committees. Recommendations from these two committees might affect PCAOB priorities. So to conclude, these topics represent our view of our standard-setting priorities as of today. Of course, changes in circumstances and new developments can result in changes to these priorities and can affect our ability to make progress on these matters. So with that as background of the proposed standard-setting priorities, I would now like to open up this discussion for your input and advice. Kimberly Gavelitz.
Good morning. Thank you for those opening remarks, and thank you to the new staff members and welcome, and thank you for those that are moving on to other roles. We really appreciate the timing and the effort that you put into this because it makes it smooth for us as we come here. Just a comment on your opening comments, Tom. I was glad to hear about what we're focusing on today with the international standards, and in particular your comment on looking at the auditing standards and looking internationally. I think most of the corporations out there are becoming very global, if they are not already, with what the SEC is already looking at. It obviously follows that we need to be looking at the auditing side of that as well. What I'm looking for is all that to be knit together such that we not only have the standards but the governance structures and the right people involved everywhere. So I applaud the PCAOB in acknowledging that and us starting that path.
Bob Kippers.
Thanks, Tom. On a related point, I think one of the challenges the board has and the staff has is the careful consideration of high-quality auditing standards to be used here in the U.S., and it's extremely important that that be carefully and deliberatively done. Your process is not particularly efficient given the sort of the double comment, regime that we work with here. But I think that, therefore, making progress is a particular challenge for the board. I guess my recommendation is that at least consider as you go forward, you head down one road and you kind of get committed. But I think it's maybe time to get broad input on which direction to head. And one approach, for example, would be to use the ISAs as just a starting point. You may decide that they're not adequate for U.S. purposes and want to add things or change things, but at least then any differences would be easily understood. I'm not going to use the C word, but I think that there's a good body of work being done, and at least that would permit you to build on, if you chose to, what's already been achieved and at least promote consistency without necessarily adopting wholesale what others have done.
Joe Carcillo.
Tom, maybe you can share with the group a discussion of how your unit evaluates performance, your performance. And it would seem to me that if I look at your group, I'd look at two things, the quality of the standards that are issued, which is hard to evaluate. That's to some extent in the eye of the beholder, I think, and the quantity of standards that are issued. And if those aren't metrics that are used, what are the metrics that are used? And the other thing I would ask is, has your group benchmarked its size versus the size of other auditing standard setters. It seems to me that the resources, when you consider the free time that was provided by the accounting firms, that was devoted to auditing standard setting and presumably still is at the auditing standards board level, and at the IAASB level, might exceed the relatively small size of your group. And essentially the bottom line question is, do you have enough people to really tackle what you've listed up here as well as what kind of the capital markets might want you to tackle?
Thanks, Joe. Ordinarily, this is a meeting where, of course, PCAOB likes to receive the advice and input from the SAG, and if anybody has some additional maybe observations with regard to that, certainly would welcome them. Just a couple of comments, I guess. I think in terms of evaluating our performance, I would characterize it as a fairly subjective rather than objective type of evaluation, and we need to think about, is there a need for a standard or a change? Did we respond appropriately? And in a timely enough fashion. In terms of size, I think it's a number of people are aware. We are still actively recruiting for people in the Office of the Chief Auditor. We're not up to what I would say a full complement of professionals. So if anybody listening who's interested in an exciting career in standard setting, please give me a call. Vin Coleman.
Tom, I also appreciate your opening comments, because when I looked at the slides, you know, the one thing that was missing from here was this impact on international that I think that we are all living through right now, whether it's the discussion about moving to IFRS. You know, you have very large global organizations, as Kimberly just talked about. And yet, to Bob's point, you know, we seem to be dealing with this with various legs of a stool. And I'm surprised that we don't have an overall priority or framework that would at least be on a path similar to the accounting side of convergence, recognizing there might be differences. We may make a decision for the different environment that we're in. But to move down the model that we continue to have, I'm surprised it's not one of our either a priority or a framework or an overarching principle with respect to, you know, the globalization of the standards. And then secondly, the point you made on XBRL I think is an excellent one. It's a very practical, short-term, difficult issue with respect to what type of association, assurance, or procedures the auditor is going to need to play with respect to that information that's going to get out in a different format and being used at various levels, both consolidated reporting and the notes to the financial statements, and secondly, the various elements, which makes it an extremely challenging issue.
With regard to resources, just a couple other thoughts occurred to me. I'd just like to add, so if people are thinking about this, they could factor this in as well. One of the things the staff does is participate as an observer to the IAASB. So we learn a lot as a result of just participating in that process. And we do begin each standard setting project by looking at what the IAASB as well as the ASB and other standard setters have done. So we don't start with a blank piece of paper on a standard setting project. We also, as I indicated in my remarks, draw on other resources within the PCAOB, including our inspections and in our standard setting projects, as well as on our talented board members who play a very active role in the entire process. So those are just some additional thoughts in that regard. Dick Dietrich.
I think this is going to come up a little bit later on today, too, but as an academic who has a responsibility in thinking about the proper education for students who will begin their careers in accounting, there are a couple of things that I think are going to come up today in different ways. And we talked about this last time, too, and it really has to do with the volume of knowledge that students need to have in order to be able to have successful careers in the profession. And the tug is going to come on a couple of dimensions. One, we're talking about international financial reporting standards today and the auditing of them, which raises the question about the need for students to have that knowledge. We talked last time about fair values and the educational requirements for that. We're now talking about potentially convergence of auditing standards, but right now, potentially two different sets of auditing standards that students conceivably could know. Now, as we think about the population of students who study accounting, not all of them are likely to practice in an area where all of this knowledge would be pertinent for them. For example, many people may concentrate in taxation or work with non-public companies. And so one of the things that's, I think, a challenging question and one that may not come up in normal course is, does it make sense to consider whether at some point the PCAOB may want to have separate qualifications for those who audit public companies that are superior to that of CPAs generally? And that's important. It comes up in the literature today about if we have IFRS mandated, essentially, how do we change the CPA exam for that? How do we have students learn IFRS? What would they do about two sets of auditing standards? The kinds of things that we've been talking at around this meeting this year are things that many accounting students may never be exposed to in their professional careers and maybe shouldn't be responsible for learning. How do we do that? How do we share that education requirement with the ongoing professional education requirements? Is that something that should be done at a university or somewhere else? So when we think about these issues, I think it's important for us to think about the people who will actually conduct the work and how we will properly educate them and where to do that work.
Bob Chirola.
Thanks, Tom, and good morning. I wanted to reemphasize what I think is the importance of looking at how the auditing profession could be or should be associated with financial information that is disseminated electronically and distributed to users in that format. As we move away from the bounded paper copy of financial statements into an electronic world where information is disseminated in elements instead of as a whole, how will the auditing profession be associated with that information? The XBRL pilot program has made me more aware, that our financial information is being packaged and distributed in ways that I have no influence over. And for sure, there's no direct auditor association. And if financial information is more often being used in that way, in subsequently packaged and disseminated formats, how will both registrants or issuers and auditors work in that world, be associated in that world, be relevant in that world beyond the paper?
Arnie Hanisch.
Thanks, Tom. A couple of points on the priorities. I guess if I were to prioritize the priorities, I would hope that given the 157 issues that are being debated right now at the FASB, that I would put fair value, and I link that in with specialists as well, the use of specialists, at the top of the list as far as the need and the urgency to try to get something out specifically on point. But I think, you know, overall, there's quite a bit on your priority list, and I hope you have the necessary resources in order to try to accomplish what you want to accomplish here. With regard to auditing standards from an international perspective, I think it would be interesting to have a future SAG session to maybe educate some of us on what these differences truly are. I mean, while I am the chief accounting officer of a multinational company, we don't spend a lot of time focused in on what the differences are with respect to auditing standards from an international perspective. So when we talk about convergence, quite frankly, I don't honestly understand what the differences are. I always thought that auditing standards were auditing standards. So a little bit of education might be helpful for the committee so that we can, you know, advise you appropriately with respect to whether there really is a need for convergence of international auditing standards. And then I guess finally, just to reiterate a point that you and I have talked about, and maybe it can get caught up in an action plan for review of interim standards. I truly believe that the board and the staff need to really step back and take a holistic view of the auditing standards now that AS5 is out there. And again, maybe it gets caught up in your review of interim standards that you sort of inherited from the auditing standards board. But I think with AS5 and setting forth a clean sheet of paper, there are many standards and many auditing practices that the firms employ that have been around for 50 or 60 years. And I think it's time that we just started out with a clean sheet of paper and say, you know, what would we have in the way of approaches to auditing and more flexibility to based upon the company's size to eliminate certain procedures that I think many of us believe are probably passé at this point, given technology and the complexities of the world that we're living in. So we just encourage you to take a fresh look at the totality and how it's all integrated.
Joe Carcello. First, let me second and expand on the comments that Dick made. As some of the board members know, this is an issue I've been talking about with the board for 5 years. Sarbanes basically gives the board oversight of the auditing profession in just about all areas except education. And so you basically are deferring to the AICPA and state boards of accountancy, the education space, which I think is dangerous. I think a certification for auditors of public companies that goes beyond the CPA exam makes a lot of sense. And the point that Dick made, I think, is something you need to think about very carefully. Just within the last 5 years, if you think about the body of information, you've got financial statements under GAAP, and now you've got under GAAP both historical cost and fair value. You've got IFRS. You've got internal control reporting, which didn't exist before Sarbanes-Oxley. So we cover COSO, AS5, system stuff onto COBIT. Auditing, the SASs we still have to cover, the PCAOB standards, the international standards on auditing, some governance stuff, this push for forensic stuff, and I'm not even touching tax, managerial, and governmental. And so if you think about this proliferation of the body of literature, guys, bluntly, there's not that many universities in the country that have the resource or the faculty to do all of this. And so if there was a certain certification, universities then could self-select. And the universities that are larger and have more resources may have the ability to focus on that. The other thing you need to think through very carefully is, I think many people in this room are aware of, the accounting professoriate is aging rapidly. There are 5 accounting professors in this room. I won't point out the names of all of them, but I think we know who they are. And I am the youngest one in the room. And I am not a young person anymore. And so we have an aging professoriate, and we don't have a pipeline on the back end anywhere close to filling this. These are big issues that will have long-term repercussions if they're not dealt with. My second point is going back to the standard setting, Tom. And I would encourage you, and I think you guys are doing this, is you now have 5 years of inspection data, if you count 03 as a limited year. From 2003 through 2007, I understand, still being ongoing, use inspection findings to analyze where there have been problems. Are there problems with performance? Are the standards themselves refined? They're just problems with implementing the standards. My guess would be those are the lion's share. But there probably will be some where the problems relate to standards that were deficient in some manner. And use that learning to inform your new standards, to drive your new standards. Before I talked about the relative size of your group versus the ASB and the IAASB and said your group may be smaller in terms of resources, but you have a major comparative advantage over them in that you have access to these inspection findings to inform standards. I don't believe they have a comparable analog. So I would really encourage you to take advantage of that advantage that you have that they don't.
John Kellis.
Thank you very much, Tom. Two points, really. First of all, on the priorities, I think they look very similar to our own priorities, which I think is encouraging to us and probably shouldn't be a surprise given the things that are floating about at present. We certainly, from consulting on where our priorities should be, have got a strong message on fair values and are revising our standard on that. But the question that has arisen is how far do you go within the standard? And we're now coming under a lot of pressure to look at the question of further guidance in some form or other. And so we're hoping to work with some of the regulatory communities with an interest in this in order to provide some further guidance. On the other point, first of all, I would welcome very... I do welcome very much your remarks about international cooperation. And I think that we very much benefit from the participation of PCAOB, both as observers to our board meetings, as Tom said, but also as members of our advisory group. And I think this interaction is extremely positive. I think the case for a clearer relationship between auditing standards in all jurisdictions is a very strong one. And when I look at the US, which naturally requires the use of PCAOB standards for foreign registrants, it just strikes me that if you were sitting there as an auditor of a foreign registrant, it would be much easier to achieve the quality of audit under PCAOB standards that you will be looking for if there's a clearer relationship between the standards used domestically by those auditors and the PCAOB standards. And the strongest way it would seem to me for that sort of relationship to be clear would be to have some sort of common base internationally of standards on which others perhaps can build. And perhaps the review of the interim standards might present an opportunity for considering that sort of model. We are at present closely working with the European Community, which is probably the largest single economic jurisdiction which is looking to adopt our standards at present. And their model is somewhat complex, as you would imagine, with an economic entity with 26 member states and a parliament to consider and a commission as well. But their model basically is to work with us and to provide input into our standards in the hope of ensuring that the end product will be acceptable to them. But they do reserve the right and opportunity to add, if necessary, to the standards, and indeed even for member states within Europe to add, provided they can justify this to the Commission in order to cope with local jurisdictional issues. So I think there may be some sort of model there, but in the meantime, certainly, I welcome this indication and very warmly welcome all input from the PCAOB, and was particularly pleased to receive, although I may not have appreciated every element of the content, a staff letter from the PCAOB in response to one of our recent exposure drafts, and I was, as I say, very pleased to receive that.
Jeff Steinhoff.
Want to echo what others have said about the important achievements of your group and very many noteworthy things. Your standard setting priorities seem to make a lot of sense. Want to focus on one, and that's your action plan for reviewing the interim standards. Arnie spoke to looking at this in terms of a clean sheet. I think this is a good opportunity to go back. I think this is a very difficult issue. The board was faced with getting started, with taking what was there, and doesn't have an easy mechanism for changing what was there when it changes on its own. So some of these interim standards, as we've discussed before, have in fact changed in terms of the original standards themselves as promulgated by the AICPA. But I think it gives you, as Arnie said, a much broader opportunity to step back and say whether these are the right standards for the time. I was struck with the comment that Bob made earlier. He was referring to XBRL. It's really the broader issue in addition to that, to where technology is taking us today, and the fact that information is available and reported in a much different manner, and whether auditing standards as developed by any standard setter, whether we're converging on the right thing or not, or whether we need to really rethink the entire paradigm here and have a different type of auditor who is much more savvy, much more aware of how information is managed and disseminated. And you might have a different set of standards altogether. You might, in fact, want to establish something through the board where you would be doing work in what I would call R&D, foresight work, thinking ahead 10 or 15 years as to how technology will take us in delivering information, so that you're just not in a position of having to converge or having to just update someone else's standards, but be thinking about, you know, maybe new and different models for this. I was struck with a couple of the comments that folks made about, you know, the amount of investment. And, you know, I think you've just done tremendous work with the staffing you have. But these are a very extensive listing here. Just working on the interim standards is a tremendous project. So at some point in time, you know, the board might want to consider, you know, what is the proper mix, or how can the board leverage the other standards that are being set. And the PCOB takes on certain things and defers to others on certain other things where you're comfortable. In your opening, Tom, you mentioned the area of assessing risk. I just want to comment briefly on that. I think that still is a very difficult area. I think that a lot is not understood about fraud, and people do have difficulty, even if they want to, properly assessing fraud risk. And I am somewhat concerned that most auditors have a very much of a limit in their ability to conceptualize how fraud can be committed electronically outside the company, and how systems can be attacked. This is a big national defense issue in our country today. We're under attack every day in terms of other countries trying to attack our defense establishment. And this is something I think is going to be even a bigger area. And to what degree should auditors be aware of the critical issues that center around computer security?
Galen Hansen.
First of all, I want to thank you so much for inviting us here again. And the agenda materials are always so well prepared. It makes my life a little bit easier in terms of preparing for these meetings. I especially want to thank the PCOB for issuing the small business guidance that came out yesterday. I've been tracking that closely, as you know, and I think it's really going to make a difference from what I can tell so far to the small business world. And I hope that that is well publicized, that the small firms are encouraged to really use that to the maximum. I also hope that the relative cost of complying with 404 going forward under AS5 using that guidance is monitored closely so that you all can respond to inquiries that you're getting on a regular basis from Congress now as to what those costs are. On the subject of education that has come up and been discussed, I do agree with Richard's comments. This is a tough business to absorb all the things that you're to absorb, but I think it's also important to remember that what is the purpose of entry to the profession through the CPA exam. It's really the gateway to the profession, and it's the basic qualifications. And what are those standards? I couldn't help but pass up on Joe's comments about whether or not it's dangerous to leave education to the AICPA and state boards. You know, most states have now passed a 150-hour rule, but we have had a lot of difficulty figuring out how to fill that other 30 hours with definition. And, that's been very, very discouraging as far as the Uniform Accountancy Act. You know, we're taking another pass at that. This time we are hopefully getting the university professors on board and their input, and I think we're going to be more successful at that going forward. But I still see the CPA examination is entry the profession, and if a specialty is needed, and the AICPA has specialties in a number of areas, and this one might be one, but I don't see it one for new staff people or seniors. This is a skill to practice in the SEC arena that has developed over a long period of time. When somebody passes the CPA exam, they're not ready to start signing audit reports. It takes a good period of time, so maybe that certification or credentialing is something that 10, 15 years down the road would be relevant, but not as a new staff person.
Lynn Turner.
On the education issue that a number of people have brought up around the table, I have recently surveyed a number of the leading academics in the country, including, I think, probably four current or prior chairs of the American Accounting Association, some of people who do writing in the area of international accounting, very esteemed professors for the most part. And I haven't got back all the responses yet, but I do have a number of them back, and they're all saying the same thing, that in the United States, there is literally no textbook to be used in the universities for teaching intermediate or advanced accounting as it relates to international accounting standards, and there's no textbook available to use to teach international auditing standards. And to date, none of them are aware of any university that is teaching those classes. It's not to say that one might exist someplace, but none of these are aware of it at all. So if you talk about international standards and you've got literally no textbook to teach it with, I'm not sure it matters whether they're all retired or not, because they ain't got anything to teach from. And it tells you that you've got tremendous challenges when it comes to the international area. You're basically starting from ground zero. And so there does need to be some forward-looking, long-term strategy with where the board expects to go in the long term. You can't. This is not something where you can just turn on a light switch and tell everyone, go jump there, because there's a lot of difficulties with that. You got the small auditing firms that also don't have the expertise. I've surveyed a number of them, and there's literally no expertise. And at a time when we're debating whether or not there's enough competition in the industry, all you'd have to do is switch to international and you could almost guarantee that a lot of smaller CPA firms would be immediately disadvantaged and become uncompetitive because they just don't have the skill set, and there's no way to go get the skill set right now, quite frankly, out there. So it does need some long-term strategy and planning, and I just don't see that coming out of this group, but certainly not on what we're seeing today at all. And I'd urge you to step back and start thinking about that, because otherwise we're going to end up with a disaster as people try to rush something that just won't work. And quite frankly, it'll end up like AS2 and AS5. And I don't know that many people would say that's a process they'd want to go through again. On the standard agenda itself, a number of these things have been up on the screen for a number of years. Things like the specialist and related parties and confirmations have been things that have been talked about in the past. It would be nice if, for once, the PCLB, after 5 years of being in existence, really could move forward with some standards and get some accomplishments such that a year from now we see some actions on these. One of my concerns is I think the board very appropriately started off on the right foot saying it was going to set the standards and not have the profession set the standards, and I think that was absolutely the correct decision. But the standard is, the profession has moved forward and improved standards over that time, and in the last year issued a number of standards that were improvements to what are now the interim PCLB standards. And so rather than being a leader, the board has become clear-cut, undeniably a follower at this point in time. And that's not to say, and I don't think the board should just automatically go adopt those or go adopt international standards, but I think the board needs to seize the reins back again and become the leader, because quite frankly, on this front, I would have to give you a D at best for the performance over the last 5 years. And I would like to see this list, see next year, this list where a number of these things are crossed off as having been accomplished and getting improvement, moving forward on some of those areas the auditing standards board has worked on, and see how those rack up. I don't see anything here that says, you know, how these relate to where the ASB has gone on their standards and improvements, so I don't know how that works. And whether this is going to leave us in greater differences and divergence there. The other thing is Ernie mentioned about the international standards and how they compare to the U.S. standards. I'd reiterate what Ernie said. It would be nice to have an educational session at which, at a minimum, people come back and provide a SAG with a description of the differences between the U.S. and international standards, so that people can have a better understanding and get a better grasp around those, as well as education on how those are enforced internationally, because if you got no enforcement, we of course know you got no standards, and that's not been an uncommon event overseas. So,
John White.
Thanks, Tom. I thought maybe if I could give you a couple of comments to the XBRL issue or question from the commission perspective. There was a press conference in September that you alluded to when Chairman Cox laid out a number of things, but you kind of had to be there to hear the Q&A to get the full picture of what he said. He basically asked the staff, Conrad, Silvana, myself, and the whole across the SEC staff, to provide a rulemaking proposal recommendation in the spring, and with the possibility of leading to a final rule in the fall of next year, about the possible required use. I use the word required versus voluntary use, but the possible required use of XBRL by U.S. filers. And so that's the mandate that we've gotten on the staff. The obvious question from that is at least one of the obvious questions is what has to be filed. And if you step back today, the financial statements that come in with footnotes and an audit opinion come in HTML or ASCII, but they come in, I guess I'd say, effectively as a paper copy, or at least it's a rendered version that you can look at. And to just give you at least the one model that we're thinking about would be that going forward, you would, in the sort of fully implemented XBRL world, what would still be coming in would be that, I'll call it the paper copy, and that the audit opinion would speak to that paper copy, and there'd be a specific disclaimer with respect to the underlying XBRL tags, the underlying XBRL file. But obviously the XBRL file would come into the SEC EDGAR system, which leaves us with the extremely important question of reliability with respect to the XBRL data tag file if there is a auditor disclaimer with respect to that. And so we are looking, so we would then be looking at the possibilities of how we would get to a level of reliability with respect to that. And there, we're thinking very broadly of different choices there. Obviously, an attestation standard of some sort would be one choice, either, you know, on a voluntary basis that could be available, but there, you could have variations in liability. You know, we have things like furnished and filed. There could be other alternatives. We've got three or four that we're thinking about, and you might do them in combination to provide a level of reliability with respect to the XBRL data tag part of that. But anyway, I just to kind of frame this, that is at least one line of thinking that we've got on this, on the XBRL topic.
Thanks, John. That was very helpful. Howard Johnson.
Thanks, Tom. I just want to make a couple comments on two subjects, and I guess join the somewhat thundering herd in applauding the thought of moving to one set of international auditing standards. I spent most of my career and a lot of my time in internal auditing and with the Institute of Internal Auditors, and I guess that organization has been fortunate. They've had one set of global standards from the beginning. With that, though, comes some challenging things. It's been discussed, how do you monitor adherence to those standards, both on an individual and a firm basis? You need it, but how do you do it? I know with the IIA, the one regarding making sure firms are adhering to that, to the IA standards is especially challenging right now. The other one, the certified internal audit exam, is pretty well acknowledged worldwide. And then on the second subject, which Arnie brought up about the clean sheet and Lynn talked about the PCAOB being, you know, 5 years old and several others, once in a while it's good to sit back and take a look at maybe the blue sky and perhaps think about a strategic renewal process. And I don't know if you've had one here with the PCAOB, but as I look at a lot of the standard-setting priorities here for the upcoming year, the kind of like tactical projects that need to be done. And when you think about things like moving to an international auditing standards, that's more of a strategic issue that obviously you can't do yourself. Maybe you can help the international world get that way. So anyway, it's just a thought. Thanks.
Damon Silvers. Damon, your mic, please. Thanks.
Yeah, take the hint. I want to sort of respond to what Lynn said about the
I'm not handing out grades, but I think that the board and the commission have been through this very strenuous period in relation to 404 and AS5, and it took a lot of resources and a lot of leadership focus, and the outcome I think was very good, there were very high stakes in that effort, in that situation, involving the ability of the system of investor protections put in place after Enron to be sufficiently flexible to respond to data coming from the outside world, and to be also tough enough to withstand political assault. And I think from all perspectives that worked out very well, as near as we can see. I mean, of course, we'll have to see what now happens as it's implemented, as AS5 is implemented. In that context, I think there have a number of people sort of on the investor side of the equation have been concerned that that unavoidably the board's overall standard-setting agenda has been set back a bit. And that is a concern of ours, I think, broadly, and I sort of would echo Lynn's view that it would be a very good idea to get moving on those items. However, I think it's really important that so in a way I'm sort of echoing what Lynn's saying, but I'm less critical of the board, frankly. I think it's extremely important that the board assert that the board is the standard setter here, and that there is no basis looking at the record of the last few years for anyone to claim that really that we ought to revert to the pre-Sarbanes-Oxley regime in which various industry bodies set their own standards. And it continues to concern me that people will look for excuses to try to revert in that direction. I would really strongly urge the board to take up the authority you have. And now that the sort of running room is clear and that the large task associated with AS5 is completed, I think that's what investors and the public are expect and hope for, and there's really no reason not to do it. I think you had a very good excuse, frankly, in the last 18 months or so for focusing on AS5 was a right decision. Now it's time to move on and really ignore any voices that are telling you that either because you've been busy, that other people that you ought to delegate back to the very people that you were created to delegate away from.
I don't see any other name tents up. Now, last year, remind you, I ended up cutting off this discussion before it was over, so I allocated a little bit more time this year. I know we haven't heard from everybody, so Ernie Baugh, thanks. Anyway, I would encourage you, if you haven't spoken, if you have any general observations about our priorities, I sure would like to hear them. Thanks. Ernie.
While you may not delegate the standard-setting process back to the individuals that or the organizations that you took it away from, I think it would be a very good idea if you took what is probably some good work that they've done, look at it very closely, and maybe adopt it. I will tell you that currently I'm getting questions about auditing private companies under PCAOB standards because it's looked on as possibly a low-cost alternative. Now, I don't believe that should be the case, but that's exactly what's coming up. The other thing I would encourage the staff to think about is possibly going through the same process the FASB has recently gone through in a codification project, and bring the standards and practices of working on public companies into a more reasonably researchable database. Thank you.
Arnie Hanisch.
Yeah, Tom, just a couple more points, maybe just to, get on the record as far as areas that I think there needs to be some review by the board, and some things that we've talked about in the past. Required communications with audit committees. I think that as we have observed, there's a lot of boilerplate information that gets put into required communications with audit committees by the auditing firms, and it's a voluminous document, and I really question whether or not it's serving the purpose for what it was intended, and maybe there's a way to relook at that, again, take a fresh look at what those required communications are and how effective they are. The other area would be in the area of representation letters. I think representation letters have gotten out of control as far as their length and breadth and depth, and auditors are throwing everything into the rep letter from the kitchen sink, and again, as to whether or not they are effective, and the depth and length of those letters is become untenable, I think. People are just really, again, it's an area of effectiveness that I think the board needs to, at least the staff ought to, at least as you're looking at interim statements and taking a fresh look at auditing activities, those are areas. And then I guess the final point would be, I really think that there ought to be more opportunity to dialogue with working groups where the preparers, the issuers, and the auditing firms under the auspices of the PCOB staff maybe have the opportunity to come together and have more dialogue as to the approach to the various auditing standards. My perspective is that the way things have been set up over the last 4 or 5 years, because of the mandate that you represent police the auditing profession, that you've been reluctant to bring the groups together, the preparers and the auditors together, to really, at least in my mind, find a common ground and a more effective way to go about performing their activities. I would encourage really more cohesiveness in that area. I think you'd get a better product.
Lynn Turner.
I actually like reading those long rep letters. It tells you where the auditors are a little bit nervous. And if the CFO is nervous about signing it as an audit committee chair, I get nervous myself. So I don't know what's behind Arnie and the long rep letters. But anyway, I want to pass on another comment that's along the lines of what Ernie said earlier, though. If not the leading educator in the auditing field, and certainly the leading researcher in auditing in the United States today, has passed on to me that he now no longer teaches PCAOB standards in his auditing class. He has excluded them and dropped them. And in his communication to me, he said the reason is because the quality of the other standards is higher now. And I think that's a sad commentary in and of itself, that you've got that going on in one of the top three universities in the country now, that they no longer teach PCAOB standards because they're not sufficiently high quality when measured against the other ones.
Rebecca McAnally.
Thank you. Just very briefly, I think it is more than abundantly clear that we have some problems, some questions, some issues that we're all concerned about that are of almost staggering proportions, with very long-term and deep ramifications. I also think we all recognize that currently there is not sufficient responsible, authoritative, and accountable infrastructure to fully address this range of problems that we're facing. We recognize that the PCAOB, despite all of the excellent work that they've done, have under the statutes limited authority. However, in thinking about this, I don't know where else sufficient expertise and experience might reside to address all of these problems. We cannot have a scattered, disjoint effort in attacking the problems. I think we have to have an overarching thought leadership and a cohesive solution that puts all of the pieces together. And so I would encourage the board, despite the limited role that it might have, an example was given education, but there are other things as well, to consider starting such a dialogue and providing some thought leadership to help bring all of the parties to the table and to attack the problems. Thank you.
John Morrissey.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. couple of comments. Number one, in terms of some of the observations that have been made about the progress of the staff and the standards that have been set, I think how quickly we forget the political and operational headwinds that this organization faced. That and to tackle a standard as so broad and so difficult and have actually executed on that goal, I think they really you really ought to be commended for a job well done, because it was a tough standard to get out. And having lived through that, having lived through it from a preparer standpoint, it's a very effective standard. I think the staff guidance all along the way was very, very helpful. And it was just a tremendous headwind that the group faced. And I think that it's not surprising that the progress on some other areas perhaps hasn't been as swift as some would like. But having said that, I think, so in some respects, the honeymoon's over, and we've got a list up there that looks quite familiar to me, at least in terms of some of the topics that were up here in the past. And I just stop with the very first one, which is fair value, which is something that is very troubling to me in terms of the operational issues associated with it, the operational questions that are flying around now as people are struggling to try and figure out how to implement this thing. And then I figure, well, if there's operational issues, there are going to be auditing issues as well. And I think that the sooner we get a game plan out there for the auditors to be able to follow, so that there's clear guidance in terms of what needs to be done, so much the better, because otherwise you're going to be in a position of not sitting here trying to be proactive about how to deal with this, but you're going to be looking at it in terms of how do we go about bandaging the wounded. From my perspective, the priorities are great. They're spot on, but really the first one up there to me is the one that really has got to get some attention very, very, very quickly.
Dick Dietrich.
Thank you. In thinking about future meetings and this issue that I have again with education, one of the things that might be helpful for you to share with us at a future meeting would be the ongoing education process for members of the inspection team. They have a very challenging role because they have to maintain currency in accounting standards and in auditing standards. And so as I think about it, in a way, they have the most difficult role of any accounting professional, because they then have to know everything that the accountants do, that the auditors do, and then they have to know how to do their reviews on that so they can do their inspections. And so it may not be that big a deal, but I'm sort of thinking, how do you do that? And so I'm just curious, maybe if there's a half-hour briefing that you could give us at a future meeting, that would be helpful.
Leroy Dennis.
I listened to everything that's said today, and I agree with all of it. When I look at the list of action items, I think you become guilty of the same thing we all do, and we look at the next year with rose-colored glasses as what we think we can accomplish, and at the end of the year we look back and and have reasons why we didn't, and they're all pretty valid. I would suggest the number one thing you do is look at that action plan for the current year and really prioritize which ones of these you can get accomplished in the current year and take the ones off that you can't. Let's not set expectations that we're going to do something on specialist when we're not going to be able to get to it this year. Let's set it for 08 or 09 or whenever that's appropriate. The other one I would tell you, and maybe somewhat radical, is, you know, we could also look at, there's a lot of resources out there. We have the educators, we have the Auditing Standards Board, we have the IAASB, and maybe we can partner this out a little bit between all those groups, because they are talented people, and in my mind, the PCAOB staff doesn't have to write all these standards. They certainly have to approve them all. And so if we use the IAASB to say, why don't you tackle the specialist issue or the fair value issue, and we'll provide some oversight and ultimately approve and tweak as we need to, we could maybe get more things accomplished because we'd have more resources.
Bob Tirola.
Thanks, Tom. This comment may or may not be relevant to the board and its official jurisdiction, but it seems to me you have a very daunting task under our system where we really are looking to the auditing profession to provide the quality assurance of our financial reporting and all of the standards, qualifications, deliberations all seem to focus on auditing. Yet the preparer community is operating without any comparable standards. And it seems to me until the preparer community also has to, live up and be qualified in a similar way, auditing in the quality is going to be quite difficult.
Cindy Richardson.
I, too, would like to applaud the PCAOB for all that it has gone through with the revision from AS2 to AS5. That's taken a lot of resources. But I would encourage, as others have said around the table, for PCAOB to use this now as an opportunity to assert its leadership role again and use the authority that it's been given. And with the challenges, particularly if the SEC is permitted to change the rules so that U.S. companies can elect to use IFRS as opposed to U.S. GAAP, that will change the entire landscape. And I think the PCAOB needs to start thinking long-term strategically now to position itself to stay in a leadership role. And I think fair value is one of those instances where that could happen. IASB has a project on fair value at the present time, but they acknowledge that U.S. is ahead of them with FASB 157 and, in fact, have explicitly stated that the 157 standard is better in terms of the disparate guidance in IFRS at the present time. So if you would look strategically at where there are other opportunities to assert leadership, I think that would be very beneficial. Because if, for example, the reconciliation recommendation by the SEC is approved and it's eliminated, I mean, you just heard around this table with a number of experts basically saying, we're not even aware of what the material differences are between U.S. GAAP and IFRS. So I would highly encourage you to do an educational session for us and others and make those materials widely available so we can intelligently discuss and debate the issues as we move forward.
Christy Wood.
I'd like to echo a number of comments that have been made here, but in particular, CalPERS gets the luxury of sometimes being involved in a number of these very large groups that take on many issues. And my observation is just that if you don't focus on, you know, things that are really that you need to do, you can just get bogged down in so many, many things. And with such a large group, I think that there are a lot of things that are nice to do, but focusing on those things which you really need to do. From my perspective, I think this issue of convergence with IFRS and U.S. GAAP is absolutely critical that we, you know, get through that in as good a shape as we can, and that from my perspective, a laser-like focus on the critical things that approach the PCOB in the next few years would be in order.
John Kellis.
Yeah, just a quick point. I wanted to take up the point made by someone down at the far right there about resources. And I think, Tom, you come to the annual meeting of some of the major auditing standard setters. And one thing which always strikes me is that there is a fantastic amount of resource in the standard setting business, if I can put it that way. The question which has bothered me over the years is, are we all making best use of our own resources, or to what extent are the reinvention of the wheel? And one thing that sadly comes up internationally is there's quite a lot of demand for implementation guidance, particularly from smaller practitioners. And I'm very sympathetic to that. I'm not sure that we have the resources ourselves to provide it, but I do feel that amongst all the standard setters, we probably do have the resources. But I think that there tends to be a tendency for the standard setters to say, well, you know, we've got enough to do with setting the standards, and you find that there are 10 or 12 standard setters around the table, and none of them are just terribly keen to dip their toe into this water. Well, that may be right, given their respective priorities, but I still think there's so much resource and talent there that they can draw on that maybe somehow over the years there is a better cooperative way of working that avoids some duplication and perhaps can produce some more authoritative other guidance, which certainly, I know in the US there is a lot of such guidance, but internationally there probably is less than there could be.
Sam Ranzilla.
Tom, Bob, I will use the C word, because I do think it is important, and I think being an observer to different standard setting is interesting, but until you develop a plan, I'll use an overworked term, roadmap, if you will, to the setting of standards on a global basis. I think one can argue that there's a fairly compelling case for one set of globally accepted accounting standards, and we'll debate that here in the next rest of the day, but it's hard to believe that there isn't even a more compelling case for a single set of auditing standards. And in fact, the largest firms base their audit methodology on the international auditing standards. That's our base that we begin with, and then we move on from there jurisdiction by jurisdition. And to Damon's point, I don't think I heard anybody today say, let's go back to where we were in the year 2000 and let the auditing profession write the auditing standards. But there is a lot of really good work being done that we ought to have a roadmap, if you will, on how the PCAOB is going to play in that global environment. And being an observer, I think, is good, but maybe it's time to take that next step and develop something more strategic along the lines of where we are. Because I think what you're hearing today is that there's a fairly compelling case to move towards a single set of standards. And you're never going to get there by just showing up at a meeting and writing a couple comment letters.
Wes Williams.
Thanks, Tom. You know, many people see the advantages of a unified set of standards. I tried to avoid the C word. But several people have also commented on the caution of using a one-size-fits-all model. We've talked about it in terms of education models. We've talked about it in terms of the CPA certification and the need to recognize specialists. And I think this also applies to standard setting. And just want to encourage the board, as it goes through these important priorities, to consider the scalability issues. And this was certainly recognized in AS5, the recent guidance for smaller issuers. And I think as we look at some of these important audit setting, standard setting priorities, we tend to focus on the application to large multinational firms, but there are thousands of smaller issuers that need to have the same standards applied to it. So I just encourage you to think about scalability as we go through these.
David Julian.
Thanks. First, I would echo some of the comments around the board being very specific as to its priorities, identifying those that they feel they can accomplish. As a practitioner in the financial services industry this past quarter, their value is of significant importance, certainly to us, and getting clearer guidelines around that would be something that certainly I'd recommend focusing on. Specific to the comments around potentially separating the qualifications of those folks who can audit on an international basis versus domestic or so forth, I would only caution the board to think about the impact that that would have on the accounting firms as it relates to those that would be willing to play in that space, and therefore it would limit to some extent the number of firms that public companies such as ourselves who are international can select from, and the competitive nature that could have and the impact on that. So just ask to consider that as well. Thanks.
Okay, well, thank you, and thank you for that sort of second round of comments. I appreciate it. It looks like there are no other tent cards, name cards up, so I will call a break, and we are a bit ahead of schedule, so let's break until 10:45. We'll resume on IFRS.